ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Going to talk about woodworking. And luckily, my guests are still here. Lou Harris, who is a furniture maker. Lou, thanks for your patience and thanks for being there.
No problem.
And I've also got Eliza Monsell with me, who is a wood sculptor, a furniture restorer and a woodwork teacher. Hey, Eliza.
Hello.
Oh, look, we're all back up and running now, thank goodness. So, look, Lou, tell me about your interest in woodwork as a child. Is that where it started for you?
Yep, sure did. When I was a little kid, there used to be a mill or something like that up the road for me, and I would ride my BMX up to the mill at night time and raid their bin. Maybe it's called dumpster diving now, but I did that as a little kid. I used to take all the pine home with me, and I'd make lots of little things, billy carts and terrible coffee tables that sagged the middle and all sorts of things, but it was a lot of fun.
Did your parents pretend to love every one of those constructions?
Yeah, I think so. They didn't last long. They seemed to disappear, though, especially the coffee table.
So at what point did you get into woodworking more seriously?
Well, it was a lot longer, actually, after that, because as I grew up, I went to all-girls school, so there was no woodworking. And so I followed more artistic sort of paths, but it sort of woodwork didn't come into my life again until later, when I actually got my own place and started replacing doors and doing things like that, and sort of piqued my interest. And I remembered how much I loved doing it, and I sort of tried to follow my nose a bit and got a job working for a cabinet maker, and it sort of started from there.
So you've now left your old job. You're a full-time furniture maker. It's obviously a big move. Are you very happy that you followed that passion?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been doing it for like 8 years now, but I went to Sturt School for Wood, so that was a big help for me to sort of transition from doing a communications career into woodwork. And since I left Sturt, I've been fully employed with some pretty amazing furniture makers over the last few years.
So what sort of furniture do you make, Lou?
Well, in my job, I make really beautiful furniture. I work for Tim Noon in Marrickville, and we make things like cocktail cabinets, beautiful tables, TV cabinets, anything really, that like bedside tables, side tables, anything really that if people have a design, we can make it.
So we'll go back to Eliza Monsell now, who's also a wood sculptor, furniture restorer and woodwork teacher. Did you have a similar story? Were you very into woodwork as a child?
I would say I was more into making things, not necessarily wood, and that would really be because I didn't have any woodworking people or anyone with a shed, so I didn't get my hands on any wood, but I used to make things in my bedroom, Lego, candles, paper, painting, cooking, cakes, like just anything. So my floor was kind of covered in paint and sorry, Mum. But so I was more just making things, and I find wood and that just the transition, it's just choosing a medium to make. I think my thing is more because I do make sculptures, it's using wood as the medium I'm going to use to create that object.
So, Eliza, when did wood become your preferred medium?
Well, I actually trained at NIDA, National School of Dramatic Art, and I did a theatre production. So for a long time I was making props for the theatre. And I guess everything in the theatre is made out of plywood. So I did get to make, and I used to make a lot of props out of all sorts of things. But just years ago, I actually saw a show on ABC TV. I think it was Arts on Sunday, and it was a girl in Tasmania, Laura McCusker, who's an amazing furniture maker. I didn't know who it was at the time, but she was on this show maybe like 15 or 20 years ago, and she was just being a cabinet maker. And in the back of my mind, I always thought, that looks cool. As I went off to do plays and make sets. And then, yeah, about 5 years ago, I just suddenly thought, well, I've thought it for a while, I really might go to Sturt School of Wood, which is where Lou went, and do a woodworking course just like that girl I saw on TV a long time ago. Funnily enough, so I was kind of fulfilling a dream in the back of my mind of I always wanted to do a woodworking course, and
So what
had the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, how much of a course like that is practical, and how much of a course like that is actually allowing you to use wood to express yourself as an artist?
Yeah, so it's a 1 year. So we both went to, it's a course in Mittagong. It's a certificate for in fine furniture. So you do get a qualification, but it's a 1 year intensive woodworking course where you learn tools and make items during the year. So you start off making a mallet and you end up making a chair, which is extremely complex. So it's a really hands-on, you know, for someone who's always wanted to have a go at learning those skills, it's an amazing course where you really intensively learn how to make all sorts of furniture. And go ahead.
I was going to say, we're talking woodworking on Nightlife tonight. I've got a couple of people with me who've decided to make woodworking their career. And I'm wondering if there's, basically, if you want to buy cheap furniture these days, you're generally not going to end up with a quality piece of timber. I wonder, Lou, if you see making timber products of something that's become a lot more bespoke.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that exhibition we're in currently with the ADC, you can see how many people are actually making bespoke and beautiful furniture, or timber furniture, I should say. It's like there's just so many people and there's a lot of options. And, I mean, if people would come to furniture makers, you know, instead of going to IKEA or places like that, it would just make the world a difference, I think.
So what, I mean, there's wood, I guess. I mean, pine is generally a more accessible wood that you tend to do see. If you are going to buy wooden furniture, pine tends to be, I guess, more affordable. What's the kind of range of those cheaper, more accessible woods to, you know, what's a really special wood to work with?
Oh, okay. Well, all wood is special. I mean, I like it all, really. I think even pine, you can make amazing things. But there's some woods, like you may make out of like rare ebony. That's an African wood that's very hard to get hold of. And the most beautiful also is Huon pine from Tasmania, which is very hard. You know, you're not allowed to chop those trees down, which is fantastic. Keep them growing, but they grow 1 millimeter a year. And when you see the beautiful rings in the wood that you use, and it's so buttery soft when you work with it, it's literally amazing. So it's a very precious resource.
So Lou, if you can't cut those trees down, I mean, how do people who work with wood end up coming across it? How rare is it to get a piece to work with?
Well, I think there's some people in Tasmania that when they were doing the logging years ago, that a lot of the wood had sunk to the ground. So I think there's a company or companies now that pull it out from the bottom of the rivers and bring it up, because you can't get it anymore. And so once they pull it out, because it's such a good wood for like boat building and all that, it's sort of kept all its qualities and it's still usable, which is amazing.
So if you're going to get something in Huon pine, now I would assume that you're paying a premium just because of the rarity of the wood.
Yeah, for sure. It's expensive. Mm.
So would that be your favourite to work with, Lou?
Yeah, I think so. It's very beautiful.
Mm. I've also got Eliza Monsell here, wood sculptor, furniture restorer and woodwork teacher. Eliza, what are your thoughts on the wood that you prefer to work with?
I think just quickly mentioning pine furniture, pines are, just to answer your question, pines are very soft wood, so the furniture you make out of it will be a little bit chunkier looking. So now I think people are moving towards harder woods because you can get, you know, the dining table will be a lot thinner, and that suits people's taste nowadays to have furniture that looks a bit more delicate. So I think I and my fellow furniture makers do prefer to use much harder woods than pine, and it's not just because the price point or anything, it's because, you know, you can you can just use it a lot more delicately. So yeah, I would say definitely Australian hardwoods are my favorite. And I'm lucky enough to live in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, and I do like to go out to the forest and find wood and try and dry it myself. So that is quite popular, actually, trying to use salvaged wood or recycled wood or something that you might find a fallen tree, because that's a way that we can feel like we're not logging a forest.
So, Eliza, what's the process when you go out for a walk in the woods and you come across a fallen tree and you think, okay, this one might suit me? I mean, what's the process from that moment of getting it home and turning it into something beautiful?
Well, actually, I go back with my chainsaw. I've had to learn how to use a chainsaw, be very brave, and go back, put it on the back of the ute and take it home. And you can sort of, as long as it's not humongous, I can mill it myself with a little chainsaw mill that I made. Anything huge, you'd have to hire a mill, but I can sort of cut small trees up that I find. And you basically, you have to dry it very slowly for a couple of years so that it doesn't all split. But then I can make things out of it. So, yeah, it's kind of fun to have a couple of things that I make wood from the Winjalo Forest when I'm dog walking. I feel like it's kind of a use of a resource that might be either firewood or just rot in the ground.
How do you dry wood? Is there a specific technique, or is it just popping it somewhere dry and waiting?
So commercially they use kilns, you know, like a big kiln, and they put it in there with either heat, you know, heat, or they just either dry it for years, or they do it quickly with sort of like in an oven. But the thing is, you have to dry it very carefully so that it doesn't split, or there's something called case hardening, which is where the wood is really dry on the outside and kind of wet in the middle, a bit like cooking a cake too quickly. So you want to cook it, you want to dry it at a very slow time. But because I'm just a small woodworker, I just dry it naturally by air, out in the air, which takes a long time. But commercially, you can use a kiln. Or just, yeah, leave it out. Like you dry firewood, just leave it out for many years.
And so you go for your walk in the woods, you bring home a piece of wood that you're able to bring home, that's the size of it, you dry it out. How many pieces of furniture or art can you make out of that piece of wood that you've patiently waited 2 years to dry?
Well, as you were mentioning before about, you know, the cost of furniture and the choice to choose handmade furniture over a chain store, you know, particle board, which is basically they get sawdust off the ground and glue it all together and make that furniture. So that's a great furniture for, you know, a cheap price point. But for people that want something a little bit more special that will last a long time, I think part of discussing with our clients is about what kind of wood. So to answer your question, when I bring home a piece of wood, it sort of depends on the design, what size, and that's where the knowledge of woodworking comes in, you know, how big a piece you can use. Also, certain bits of the tree trunk are difficult to use. So if you use the very core of the trunk, which is a little circular middle, it might sort of split off. So there's different bits of the tree trunk that you want to use for your piece. So, yeah, it all depends on what you're making, and you can discuss with the customer, you know, the price point, what kind of tree, all sorts of things. There's so much that goes into it. It's actually extremely technical.
We're talking woodworking. I've got Lou Harris, who's a furniture maker, and Eliza Maunsell, who's a wood sculptor and furniture restorer, with me on Nightlife tonight. Now, they've both done, you know, a lot of study to become woodworkers. Lou, what are the kind of tools that a woodworker needs? I'd imagine, I mean, Eliza was talking about having to get familiar with the chainsaw. What's the key for a woodworker, the key tool?
The key tool. It's many tools. It's like a lifelong gathering of tools, really. So basically you need like a workshop, because a lot of things we do requires big machinery. So you need to be able to square the timber off. So you need a jointer and a thicknesser. You need a bandsaw. You need a table saw, a router. And then there's a million hand tools that you need, like hand planes. Just the list goes on and on. It's always something that there's always another tool you need. Clamps.
What was the hardest to master? What's the tool that misbehaves the most?
Oh, I don't know if they misbehave. It's probably the wood that misbehaves the most. So you might get a cranky piece of timber and it doesn't matter which way you do it, put it on the jointer or with your hand plane, it's not happy about being planed. I don't know. I think all tools, they're fine. It's just, it's usually the wood.
Now, Eliza, I know you you teach woodwork and specifically you teach something called steam boarding. What's that?
But you got it almost right. It's called steam bending.
Ah.
So very close. But, so one of the methods of woodworking, as Lou said, if you want to have a full workshop, you need a cacophony of tools. But there are some things that you can make that you only need a couple of things. So when I teach classes, I try and do projects that people can just do with a few things at home. So there's this amazing technique called steam bending. And the classic chair is called a bentwood chair, which you'll see in a French cafe. And basically when you heat wood up and you cook it either in hot water or steam, you sort of soften the fibres. So you take your little piece of wood, you cook it in a hot bath or hot steam for a while, and then it gets all soft and gooey and you can bend it around a form, which is pretty amazing. A straight piece of wood, you can bend it. And then when it cools down and dries out, it will stay that shape forever. So I make these little boxes in my classes where people can make their own steam bent boxes, and they absolutely love it because they're bending wood before their eyes.
Wow, so it's kind of like working with clay or something like that that's all malleable and then it's going to dry out.
But I'll show them the dry piece of wood and it's like a piece of wood from the hardware store. You know, it's just a stick or a piece of wood that's solid, and then magically they can bend it and they always feel like they have superpowers and they love it. And then when they get to go home with their little box. It's sort of using, I really love, the one thing I love about woodworking is that merging of science and technology with creativity. So showing people a sort of a scientific technique which they can use in creative ways, I think people just really enjoy that, using with their hands.
Eliza, obviously technology is changing a lot of things in the world right now. Is it having any impact on woodworking?
Yeah, and again, I think especially with woodworking as well as other things, you're always limited to by what tools you have around. So when I started woodworking, when I worked in the theatre, I had a workshop and 20 people to help me make anything I wanted. We had everything. And then when I started in my little shared woodworking, I thought, oh, I have a chisel and a hammer. What will I make? So you're sort of, you're limited to, you have to think, what can I make with what I have and be resourceful? So I think what technology has brought us in recent times is amazing techniques that we can use that wouldn't have been possible 100 years ago.
Lou, what's the piece that you're proudest of that you've worked on?
I'm proud of most things that I make, but I guess the proudest thing is a jewellery cabinet I made when I was at Sturt. Because it involved a lot of techniques, and it took a lot of effort to finish it and get it done, and it was for actually my friend who's a jeweler, and she uses it all the time. So that probably is my proudest piece.
And Lou, do you see an increase in women being interested in getting more into woodwork?
Oh yeah, I think so for sure. From my own experience, I know. It just wasn't something that even though I was interested in it, it wasn't really there or visible as I was growing up for me to even think that's what I might want to do. So I think now just people like Eliza and myself There's so many woodworkers, women woodworkers doing it and teaching it. I think it's making a big difference, and it's a real possibility for girls everywhere to have a go at.
Yeah, well, Eliza, you were saying, though, you went to an all-girls school. There seemed to be no question that woodwork would be available. Do you see that changing at all?
Yeah, I think so. I was the same as Lou. I just thought it's something other people do. But it wasn't until I think nowadays the more people see women using tools, doing trades, making objects with technology, all those things, I think young girls hopefully will become interested in and realize they can do that stuff. And I hope that it will be encouraged at schools that, yeah, you can do these things. They are careers.
Now, you both have pieces that you've made in the Art of Making exhibition. It's on at the Australian Design Centre in Sydney. Lou, can you describe your piece for me?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. My piece is a small side table. It's called the Swift Side Table. And I made it out of recycled timber, which was 100-year-old floor beams that I had rescued out of a house that had been white ant eaten. And I had to decide on how to make it because, like, the resource that I had was sort of limited. So I decided on a small side table, and I coopered it, which is the process of making a circular like vessel, I guess. And I wanted it to be sort of, in a way, because I call it the Swift side table after the Swift parrot. And I wanted it to represent like a log hollow where the Swift parrot breeds. And I just wanted to make a comment about the logging of old growth forests and how important it is to use recycled timber, and also to think carefully about items that you buy, wanting it to be a piece that lasts forever, basically.
Eliza, I know you've got three artworks in the exhibition, and we might have time for you to describe your favourite, if you can choose your favourite.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have three pieces that are all wall sculptures, so they're all on a theme of a flower. So I think my favourite is one that's pink, because I experimented with dyeing the timber different shades of pink. So that's probably my favourite. But they're three in a theme are my sculptures, and on at the Design Centre, which is on William Street, Darlinghurst, I should mention.
That's right. So if people are in Sydney and they want to have a look at that, I think it's on until the 4th of May. The exhibition is The Art of Making. Eliza, Lou, thanks so much for being here on Nightlife tonight and just telling us a little bit about what you do.
Thank you.
That is
great to talk to you.
Lou Harris, furniture maker, and Eliza Monsall, who's a wood sculptor, furniture restorer, and a woodwork teacher.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.